You're listening to Unpaused, a podcast for women who want to stage a career comeback or mastermind a new one after an extended break from work. I'm your host, Judy Stewart, and if you want to reclaim your career but don't know how, then this is the podcast for you. Let's meet our guest for today. Hello, everyone. Here's a bonus episode that I've put together for you. I've edited the 7 interviews you've heard so far and picked out the gems of practical advice from each of my guests. It's an unpaused inspiration piece, if you like. One of the most important factors influencing any unpause is the pause itself. In episode 2, Julie Gibbs describes how she forced herself to take those early steps to unpause so that she stayed in touch with her world. The importance of staying close to your friends and also maintaining professional connections cannot be overstated. No one can come back on their own. The web of connections that tether us to each other are going to be important throughout every aspect of your life. Feeling that you just can't face people or that no one is going to be interested in you now that you aren't at work is one of the hardest psychological obstacles to overcome. We've all felt it, but also one of the most important. Let's hear Julie again.
Absolutely, to maintain your connections. Don't go off and because you're in the wilderness, let your connections lapse. My connections and my friendships and those people who have faith in you that will help you get through anything. But you have to work at those relationships. The people that have been really good networking connections, people you admire, stay engaged, stay in touch with people. Keep your friendships and your professional connections alive. I made myself go and have my hair and nails done and put on a dress and go to events when I was feeling like dying a thousand deaths. Made myself do it. And I'm so glad I did, because people at least saw that I still existed. So that's what I would say is, as hard as it is, try and get someone to go along with you, but try and summon up some courage to keep out there. It's very, very important. And when you are dealt a blow, really rely on your friends, on those people that you know have faith in you. They got me through. They really did. They know who they are. And they were unfailingly loyal and would say, come on, let's go and do this. And come on, it's not that bad.
The act of actually unpausing, stepping out of the workforce, can happen for an infinite number of reasons, and often for reasons that are entirely personal or even out of our control. Tim Walker talks about burnout, that feeling that you just can't go on. If it coincides with a milestone of achievement, that's great. But there are times when it doesn't, and that you just have to acknowledge that your time is up. But it can be regenerative. Let's hear what Tim has to say about when he finally left the ACO after 10 very productive years, the years that really set him up.
I think the time I decided to leave was the day we moved into our new premises at Circular Quay. It just felt by then that I'd completed a body of work, including getting a proper home for the orchestra, and that it was ready to move on. And also it was partly a reflection that I just had to get off the treadmill. You just cannot keep up the momentum of running an organisation like that forever. You just need a break from it. And the break gave me time to do some consultancies. I ended up doing 5 consultancies with different arts organisations. And it also gave me the time to plan the World Orchestra's idea. So I actually needed time out of the market, and I needed to initiate something that was all my work.
This time out also gave Tim the time, the ability, and the space to ruminate on the germ of his next big idea and to bring it to full fruition. That idea was the World Orchestra season, which brought the world's most important orchestras all the way to Australia, a true first for concert-going audiences here. For him, it turned out to be the springboard to the London Philharmonic job. It was what happened when Tim did something, and its value only became obvious later and with hindsight. Some call that the real soul of strategic planning.
Well, I'd been thinking about it for a year before I actually finished at the ACO. So the idea had been germinating. I thought that we were missing out by not having what the major cities in the world have, and that's international orchestras visiting on a regular basis, and that there must be a way of making that happen. And in fact, in the first year we did it, it was very successful. It was trying to sustain it that I could see would be difficult. And the other thing I realized was after a break from the ACO, I actually felt more comfortable being right in a performing arts environment, leading a company, rather than being like a grocer, buying in orchestras and putting them on and then they go. When the headhunter approached me about the London Philharmonic Orchestra, although I had no intention really of leaving Australia and coming to London, it did make me suddenly realise that it's quite isolating being a presenter. You do a lot of hard work, the orchestra comes, gives its concerts and then goes. And what I really missed was the sense of camaraderie, team working environment, being much closer to the artistic process and so on. And I think I'd had enough years out of the ACO so that by the time I came to the LPO, I felt I was refreshed and I could do that again. So I actually needed time out of the market, and I needed to initiate something that was all my work, because in as much as I had developed the ACO from part-time to full-time and grown the amount of work and grown the budget, I felt I wanted to do something that was completely my own work and start something from scratch. Having established world orchestras, which in a sense I should have continued doing, it actually was a strength that I then had in getting the job in London. The orchestra was really here looking for somebody who was entrepreneurial and amongst other things. And the establishment of world orchestras sort of indicated that I was entrepreneurial, that I could plan everything in a company to present orchestras. It demonstrated artistic judgment and so on, which were important qualities. They were looking for the job in Britain.
When David Pryor hit rock bottom, no job, no money, no visa, it's possible that those around him thought, well, look, you've given it a go. It hasn't worked out. Let's look at some more conventional options. But he didn't do that. He backed himself and really thought about what could be salvaged from what he'd already done and turned into work he could love.
So I started to write myself out of a hole. I started to pitch more stories again. I built up my portfolio. And the great thing about having done that Somerset project is that I was pulling in ideas from all around the world. Mm. So again, coming back to that, I started to turn those ideas into stories.
But you did have a big portfolio of work and experience that you could think, I could recast this material into something tangible.
That's right. Exactly. And so I decided that I would really give it a go to be a travel editor. There's really only a few travel editors that worked in the way that I did. And so it was story to story, but I managed to successfully stitch together a story after story after story program so that I would be on the road for 200 days of the year. And that kind of rebuilt my confidence.
Having a support group of trusted confidants and advisors can also make a difference, a sort of war council. The not-for-profit sector is one which has used this model to great effect to overcome shortfalls in expertise, time, and people on the ground. And here, David describes his special group of older women that he has in his life who've consistently been the people who have helped him re-engage with work, re-inspire him and reprogram his career after a major body blow.
I have maybe five women who are, one of which is you, who I know will always be there for me, even if I'm at a low ebb, which I have been many times. And they can pick me up because it's great friends, but it's also, I think you need to build relationships with people outside of your own family that understand where your professional skill set lies.
I would like to now come to artist agent Virginia Braden, who had some tough advice, but at rock bottom, it's probably the most valuable.
The two top advice things are, how badly do you really want to do this? Because this is going to be very, very hard, and you are going to have to make sacrifices with your family, with your children, you know, with the number of hours you work, with the amount of money that you pour into keeping yourself in tip-top condition. Mm. And then how much are you prepared to work on your own and work with a support group of teachers and so on, and just constantly, constantly put yourself forward for work that you know you can do. And if you've got enough patience to stick it out, and if you've got the temperament to be prepared to accept that and not let it agonize you all the time, which affects your personality and it actually affects your performance, then do it. But if you feel that you just haven't got the strength for that, and particularly for people who are young enough to rethink a career and either branch off into something else like music teaching, or, you know, there are a lot of other things now. The options are very big because there's the whole tech industry, there's streaming and all those things. There are recordings, there's television, there are a number of things which would find a music background useful. And then you have to seriously say to people, you want to look at the alternatives as well. Don't just concentrate on being a soloist or an opera star. Know yourself well enough to know that you have to back off and do something else.
My conversation with Tim Walker also touched on this theme of your role in your restart. As CEO of the London Philharmonic, he's always being asked for favours, for opportunities. He's had to learn to manage these sometimes uncomfortable moments. But rather than say no, he says instead, "I'll meet you halfway." It's great advice for someone who maybe has unreal expectations that it's by doing things that you get notice and that create the opening for an opportunity to come up.
It generally means going back, being prepared to say, "I need to do whatever I can here and there," because it's actually the doing that leads to the breaks. The sitting at home and doing nothing isn't going to give the breaks. If you're sitting at home waiting for the phone to ring because the LPO wants to book you to the Royal Festival, it's not going to happen. But you are doing things and you can be noticed and you can be proactive. I'm quite impressed by a number of artists who are proactive in the sense that they will write with good ideas, not artists who will just constantly write to you saying, "Come and have a look at this, come and have a look at this." In the end, you just sort of block them because you don't want to hear anymore. But there are artists, generally composers, who will write and say, "Look, I've been thinking about this. What can you advise? Could we meet to discuss?" And people who have an idea that resonates, then I'm happy to meet and discuss and help and so on.
Jody Gibbons is a professional career coach, and her thoughts on the reimagining of a career are, perhaps surprisingly, perhaps not, grounded in old-fashioned common sense. She suggests what I call the bookmaker's approach. Draw a table of the A's and B's, what's holding you back on one side versus what value you bring, and that's over and above your skill set, and then weigh them up.
You need to verbalise or put it on paper. If you haven't got someone you can talk to, put it on paper. On one side, all the things that are worrying you about going back to work. Mm. Get it out of your head. All of this imposter syndrome, I'm going to be found out, I'm not good enough. Yeah, all of that. Put it on paper and recognise that half of it's bollocks. It's not true. It's just messages that you're telling yourself. Yeah. Then put on paper, what are my strengths? How do I add value to other people, to an organisation? And what do I need to succeed?
Mm.
And what do I enjoy? Like, you know, if you're doing what you enjoy, you are much more likely to be successful at it.
Mm.
But I think particularly when you've had children and you're managing a house, and even though the guys are stepping up and being much more co-parenting, which is fantastic, it's still a lot. You're still the mum. You can't change that. It's biology. You're the mum.
Mm.
And so there's a lot that you're juggling. So I think just putting on a piece of paper, you know, what is it that I'm worrying about? And then what is it that are really my strengths? What do I enjoy? And how do I bring value? Because value is a very different thing, rather than my skills. I think skills are very antiquated. It's much more about how can I bring value to an organization today and it's the whole of me, everything I'm good at, all of my experience. I mean, the whole point of coaching is you create this safe space where people can say, I bloody hate myself, or I feel completely dissatisfied by my career. And, you know, generally they're coming in with one of those headline statements and then we just deconstruct it. And then you really do literally go back to those simple foundations of what are your strengths? What gives you energy? What do you enjoy? How do you bring value to an organization? And what do you need to succeed? How do you ask for what you need to succeed? So it's going back and helping them reconstruct who they want to be.
I really like the way David Pryor, and Julie Gibbs mentioned this as well, made the free application, Instagram, the window to their world and the vehicle of choice in developing a following for his stories and ideas. It's worth paying close attention to how he did it. Nothing mysterious, like everyone else on Instagram, it began with stitching his photos together into a series of coherent ideas.
Instagram was powerful for me. I used it as a visual diary in a way to stitch together the stories if I was in a particular place. So I'd take five pictures a day and that were the kind of things that I knew that I would write about because I was terrible about writing down. And you're right to make the point that I'm much more visually led than I am written, to be honest. And I would take those photos and I built a little bit of a following of the right people. It's not an influencer thing, but the right editors and the right industry people, and they followed along and I used my instinct around what the next destination is, telling different stories that weren't being told. I would go to, say, Beirut, find these particular places that hadn't been written about, and then all of a sudden I'd get emails from editors saying, oh, can you do a story on that? And that's kind of how it happened. So Instagram was a great way to show where I was, great little platform for me to express. I'd always fall in love. Every time I go to somewhere, I completely fall in love with the place or find something that is really special. And it's a very genuine thing. And a photo was a good way to capture that.
This brings me to Bryony Fitzgerald, who spoke in very plain language about how a career represents an accumulation of smaller efforts and the value of having the drive to move consistently forward. I especially love what she says about eventually being in a position to own and work in her very own space, bringing into our modern lives this old and recurrent theme of the importance of a room of your own.
There's no meteoric rise. It's literally, I got married, I had children, and I started working literally two afternoons a week when Isabella was a baby for sanity. I had a babysitter and I worked at Porter's Paints and I mixed paint. That's where I learned how to all about paint. So it's literally taken 26 years to get to this point, just purely because of where I was in my family life. I think the thing about this place for me was like a new kickstart. I've been in the same place for 9 years, and to actually move into something that was mine, that was completely set up to be exactly how I want, that I think that I can spend the next 10 or 12 years to the end of my career, I know I can do it here.
It's interesting that Bryony's new space coincided with finalising her website. When I first knew Bryony, she had a placeholder for a website, which I found hard to understand. Given the scale she was working at, she was always saying it was coming. But it was only recently that the portfolio of her work was documented and presented together in this way. It's beautiful. You should have a look at it. I feel it's so important to document your work as you go, so that you can fall back on that physical documentation when you're ready to represent yourself to the world. It's not something I did particularly well myself, and it was only later in life that I realized the cost of not having made the time and taken the effort to capture those successes in a physical way. Even though we live in a digital world, having the hard evidence is important.
That took at least 10 years to get a body of work that I thought was good enough to photograph and have as a website. It takes such a long time to build that up in this business. It's not like making fashion or even cooking that you can make something quickly. I have to wait for the people to let me do my job properly. I can't do it by myself.
And here are another couple of things from me that I thought were worth repeating. I think it's very easy when you're in full flight in a career to let those friendship networks fall away, because friendship networks take a lot of work to nurture and maintain. And the double whammy that a woman who's had a big career can experience is that she goes home, she's lost her identity that she associated with her working life, but she can also be very lonely. So reviving those networks is very important. And yes, they could be very helpful to you. And I think, again, the science will tell you that often the opportunities come from the least likely sources. It's not the chairman of the Commonwealth Bank that will help you find that next role. It'll be someone who's on the periphery often of your life that you bump into in a very accidental way. I think the important thing is for a woman in that position to tell someone she's looking. The worst thing she can do is to harbour that secret for reasons of pride or feeling that she's not confident enough to tell someone. The lucky breaks that I have had have come my way because I've been sitting next to someone or talking to someone and I've told them I'm looking, or I'd be open to something. Mm. And I've had a go. And that's, again, where the not-for-profit sector can come in, that it gives you the opportunity in a reasonably low-commitment way at the start to have a go and try a few different things and to see how it actually feels. There are quite a few things I do differently, but I think that the easiest thing to say that I really regret is that I didn't take an hour a day to work on my career when I was at home with four screaming children. I always felt I was so busy and so pushed and so occupied, but actually I could have set aside a small amount of time every day to work on something that was important to me. I just didn't have the perspective of the long-term view. If you look at an hour a day cumulatively, you can do an enormous amount in a year. I hope you found some nuggets of gold in season one of Unpaused. I've certainly enjoyed putting it together. And thank you for all your feedback so far. I'm here to help, so don't hesitate to get in touch. It actually helps me to understand you and what you want as well. The contact information is on our website. You can also become a member of the Unpaused community and receive updates on season two by subscribing on the website, unpaused.net. In the meantime, you can follow me on Instagram @_unpaused. Unpause the podcast is produced by Leonie Marsh, sound engineered by Lana Christensen, and researched by Claudia Cameron. I'm lucky to have their help.